So this is Amy Roth McDuffie, and I have the pleasure of interviewing Karen Karp. She was our last Judith Jacobs lecturer at the 2013 annual meeting. So at AMTE, your presentation highlighted the need to include special education in conversations and work related to equity. Given that not all members were present for the session, can you talk about pressing issues regarding special education that mathematics teacher educators might want to think about?
Well, one of the things that is really interesting about this group of students, which make up about 10% of the general population in schools, is the fact that when equity conversations occur, they're often overlooked. And this is a group, as I said in the lecture, that has been invisible in some cases, and and that's what equity is looking for. Mm-hmm. Equity is looking for who are the kids being overlooked, who are the kids that are not getting the education that they deserve, and how can we make a more mathematically literate citizenry. And this is a population that still is in need of support. Surely their test scores show that they have a serious gap of knowledge. Surely they're leaving schools in many cases not prepared to take on careers or college. And there isn't, in some cases there isn't the urgency from the general education teachers that this is something that they need to attend to. Mm-hmm. And so that was really my major message, that it is our job, both as mathematics teachers and as mathematics teacher educators, that this is a population that needs to be a part of our methods courses, a part of our attention, and a part of our research. And we should make sure that people who are doing work, which I know there are many people out there engaging in this kind of work, are sharing those ideas at our conferences. Because, as I mentioned there, when you look at even an equity-focused conference, there really are not a lot of sessions on special education. Mm-hmm. So it is an issue.
Well, and another point that you spoke to, or perhaps implied, is that as we look at past work in mathematics education and in special education, mathematics education has been heavily influenced by a constructivist epistemology, and special education has tended to lean more towards behaviorist perspectives. And often when we do this work, we need to work with colleagues that are in special education first, and we're in mathematics education first, and that kind of thing, or maybe that's the wrong perspective right there. Based on your work, what are your ideas and approaches regarding bridging these two fields to really support student learning and make a difference?
Well, I don't believe that these are the ways that the theories were intended to be carried out, but the reality is that a constructivist approach, the way some people have interpreted it, is the construction of having students construct their own ideas, which of course is a worthy task. And having students do the thinking is surely, I think, the underlying piece. That can still be carried out by students with special needs, but what they have trouble with is sometimes, as we said in the work from Geary, is that Geary's work pointed to the fact that they have a difficult time building the cognitive structures. Mm-hmm. And they're really in need of having someone help bridge the connections for them. And I don't mean that they actually do it, but that they kind of point to, here's something you need to be thinking about. Mm-hmm. So whereas a child in a regular general education class can see the bridges between the division that they've been learning with whole numbers and now some models with division of fractions, maybe the measurement model, it works for them and they're going to carry it out again. A student with special needs probably needs to have that more explicitly pointed out to them. Now, on the other hand, I do not believe that it should be a behaviorist approach where, this in some cases that someone else is structuring it so much that the child is not really doing the thinking and putting these pieces together. As my colleague Barb Daugherty has often said, when you take it to the level where you break a task down into tiny pieces and share each one of those with the students with special needs, this is one of the populations that's probably going to have the toughest time of any putting those pieces back together and making sense of it.
Or even remembering all the
pieces. Or even remembering all of them, because memory is not their strong suit. So memory shouldn't be the way a lot of material is presented to them. But when we have these multiple representations that we like to make as part of a constructivist classroom or lesson, where we're doing things with materials, we're doing things within a context, where we're also showing the equation, where we're doing all of these components, the student with special needs is the one that needs to have everyone kind of help bridge how those pieces are connected so that they can make the network of ideas kind of fall into place in their head. And but, you know, there are challenges for people who have been reared as math educators have on a certain set of ideas, and special educators have been on a very different model. And because many special ed folk in their programs really have not had a lot of mathematics pedagogy, they have had a lot of reading, but they've not had a lot of math. This is doubly difficult, I think, and takes a little extra effort on both sides.
So you mentioned Geary, and that sort of takes me to my next question. What research or particular articles or bodies of work has been particularly useful or important to you in advancing your thinking in this area?
Well, Geary had an article that I referred to during the talk. It's entitled Mathematics and Learning Disabilities, and it was actually out of the Journal of Learning Disabilities in 2004. And, you know, what we've noticed is that, you know, that a lot of people believe that, you know, the comorbidity of the problems that students with special needs have, that where their reading and their math are problematic, that they've tried to read problems to students and tried to do things that, you know, at first they thought reading was the issue, but really Geary points out that it's this underdeveloped cognitive structures, and that includes immature strategies where they make irrelevant associations, and he also said failures in visuospatial representations, and of course this is very much, you know, what we're presenting in regular classrooms. So we need to work with that, and this article is, I think, a really important one. And so we want to have these underdeveloped cognitive structures move to a place where we can begin to help them connect the new information to the prior information that they already have. And I think that that's probably a key article.
And what about next steps? What would you say is some key research that we need, or where do you see gaps in the field related to special education and mathematics?
I think that one of the things that I think is really key, and this is an interest of mine right now, is this whole component of progress monitoring. And it's where we're, you know, taking formative assessment to a little bit different level, where we're actually doing diagnostic interviews with not every child, but certain children under certain circumstances on certain topics to try to identify not just their gaps, but their strengths. Because it goes back to Geary's work, if we're going to work from prior knowledge and, you know, build these cognitive structures, we have to know where they have strengths and where they have things we can work from. And so these interviews, I think, people in special ed are working on them now, and I think more and more people are in a situation where they're becoming very interested in them. I recently, after our presentation we did at NCTM this year, my colleague who's a special educator and I heard from, we did one on diagnostic interviews, and we heard from, you know, school system that's actually going to put someone in place to do diagnostic interviews in one of their schools, and so was kind of still chatting with me about that. And I think that that's going to be a real rich source of information for people who really want to dig deep and find out what are the best next steps for students and tailor the instruction. I mean, we've got whole groups of teachers who have ID'd children as not doing well in math. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, rooms and lists of kids in schools of the kids that are below, but they don't know what they're below in. Mm-hmm. They're not. It's not a sensitive tool. It doesn't really tell them what to do next. It just says they're not doing well in math. So it's just too gross a measure for any real help for a teacher. And we're out to help the teachers and try to find ways to pinpoint areas that they can work from. So I think that that's an exciting area. I think the whole collaboration and co-teaching is also a really exciting area. Co-teaching is becoming a bigger part of a conversation across the country in many states, mm-hmm. where they're requiring it and actually requiring it in pre-service teacher programs as well. But there aren't a lot of examples of it out there, mm-hmm. and there sure is not a lot of examples of university courses co-taught. Mm-hmm. And we're doing one now, and it's very complicated, mm-hmm. because we each get paid half for it. I mean, it's a very kind of unusual situation, and it's not really rewarded, so we have to just kind of want to do it on our own and not worry about the rest. So those are, I think, two areas, the co-teaching and the diagnostic interviews, mm-hmm. that are worthy avenues for people to consider, mm-hmm. thinking about. Mm-hmm.
And it seems like general education could benefit from work in both of those areas as well, too.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
So the last question is, can you recommend an article that you have written and discuss why you think it might be a good one for folks who are just taking on these kinds of issues to read?
Well, I had an article that was written with a teacher and my colleague Phil Howell, who works at a school for students with disabilities, and it's called Building Responsibility for Learning in Students with Special Needs, and it really talks to the issue of making students do more of the work and take on more of the responsibility for the learning. Many of them become, year after year after year, very dependent on a teacher to structure the thinking, structure the problem, kind of rescue them in some cases. And so this article really focuses on how to get children to start to engage more in the learning process and take more leadership in their own learning. And they're often not asked to do that, and this is, you know, a little hard for them in the beginning, but definitely a direction that they need to take. So I think that that would be a good start, and it's in the NCTM journal, so mm-hmm. I think it would be easy for people in our group to access that one.
And I've read that article, and I found it was very helpful, and it spoke exactly to those nuanced ideas of how do you provide extra support without taking away the cognitive work.
You really want them to be doing the thinking. I mean, it goes back to that popular article by Steve Reinhardt in the NCTM Journal, Never Say Anything a Kid Can Say. Mm-hmm. And I think that also works for students with special needs, too. And they need to have the opportunity to teach someone else something, so they need to take on more responsibility.
Well, thank you very much for your time, and I hope that this gets other conversations going.
I hope so, too. Thank you for interviewing me. Okay.